good morning and welcome, welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, and Calvin Putenhoff coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call or text. Same number, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Or leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Very busy show coming up for a Monday. Coming up at 10:33, Corrine Hendrickson is going to be joining us from a group called We Can, which stands for Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed. And we know childcare is a major issue in Wisconsin, not just in Wisconsin, but all around the country. And what a challenging time it is for daycares and daycare workers and for parents. So we're going to be talking to Corrine Hendrickson coming up at 10:33 about what actions they would like to see happen. And then coming up at 10:50, we will keep the conversation going with Sarah Cazell, who is also part of this group, and she is an early childhood provider. So it'd be nice to get her perspective as one who deals with this on a daily basis. And as we said, too, we have a round of the good, the bad, and please make it go away. Coming up at 11:06, Corey Hartman, our very own from Civic Media, is going to join us at 11:33. We had some thunderstorms come through a little bit earlier this morning. There are more on the way, and we may have some more severe weather we need to be on the lookout for tomorrow. So we'll have an update with Corey coming up at 11:33. Stay tuned for that if you can.
Yeah, we lost some power this morning here and there.
You flickered a couple times, didn't you?
I flickered, yeah, like right before Pat's show. He and I were catching up on the live stream and like getting ready for it, and all of a sudden it just pop, pop. And he goes, oh, no.
Yeah, that's always right before you go on the air. That's usually the last thing you would like to see happen is the lights flickering. It's like, oh.
Or someone shows up with a pizza because then you're like, oh, man, I want some pizza. Showtime. I can't eat pizza.
Oh, then you have to wait.
I know.
This is important if you are on the roads, especially in the Milwaukee area. WISN reporting the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office has announced a freeway closure. This is westbound 94. At approximately 9 a.m., they're looking for physical evidence after a reported shooting. So the shutdown affects the area from the stadium interchange to 60th Street. We talked about this website before. It's 511wi.gov. Very useful website. It lists all the accidents and all the incidents all across the state. Yeah. That's 511wi.gov. And as I'm looking at here, I can see the bright red spots. The ramp from Brewers Boulevard north to 94 closed because of that incident. Also, 94 westbound closed from 175 north, also because of that incident. So things very, very snarled up in that area. And the ramp from Wisconsin 175 south to 94 west also shut down.
Great.
So, yeah, it's not going to be good traveling in that area. So if you can avoid the stadium interchange, that would probably be a good idea. Find some way to get around that. But download the app.
Yeah, 511wi.gov. Wi.com. Yeah, it's a great app.
It really is. It's very useful. As is the Civic Media app.
What?
Yes.
Also, is that what?
Also that? Very useful.
That's called a segue.
Yeah, and it's free. So
no, it's not. I don't believe you. It can't be free. It's too good.
It is absolutely free. It allows you to listen to all of the stations and all of the shows all across the state in case you can't pick them up on traditional terrestrial radio. Mm-hmm. So you can listen on the app. Download the Civic Media app wherever you get your app stores.
And what do we say?
It probably won't change the course of your entire life, but
it
shouldn't make it worse.
I want to hear I don't want anyone's life to go bad,
no.
But I do want to hear like, I downloaded your app. And then my wife left me.
No, I
know. Why did that happen? I don't know.
I would like it to be, I downloaded your app and I met the person of my dreams.
There it is. I don't want bad things to happen, but when we say something like it won't like make your life any worse, I feel like that's life saying, oh, hold my beer. I'll take care of this.
I just don't want to oversell it.
No, exactly. But it's,
I hate
free
to oversell.
Wonderful.
It is free and wonderful. Tom from LA is on the line to start things off. Good morning, Tom. How you doing? What did you want to start off with?
Good morning, guys. Hey, I just wanted to say to all the people out there in the listening audience that something to really start thinking about is that this upcoming election and all elections are not about Joe Biden or about Donald Trump or owning the libs or any of that stuff. This is about all of us. This is about we the people. This is about what we want for our kids, our grandkids, the actual policies that are going to be there to help, whether we have a democracy, whether we have an authoritarian dictatorship. And we really need to stop and just step back and go, boy, what is it do I want for my, you know, future generations? And I think we get caught up in the minutiae and the, you know, zingers and this and that, but it all comes down to policy. And that's why I would recommend everyone go to a website called selectacandidatequiz.com, where it's just got policy questions, and then it tells you who it is that you line up with the most. And, you know, if it's more Democratic, I say vote more Democratic. If it's more Republican, vote more Republican. But at least you're voting against your own best interest. And I just want people, as they start the week and they start the month, you know, or the end of the month, to think about, this isn't about who wins and who loses. This is about all of us winning.
What was the name of that website again, Tom? It sounds interesting. It sounds like a dating app for political parties.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's selectacandidatequiz.com.
Selectacandidatequiz.com. That's great. We'll put that in the show notes.
I'll take a look at it first.
Well, yes.
Yeah, we'll review the site first.
Thank you so much, Tom. Really appreciate it. As always, you can join the conversation, too, at 855-752-4842 or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. So over the weekend, the Wisconsin Republican Party held their convention in Appleton.
Trying to find my like little party.
It was an event.
Yeah.
Yes. And there are still so many mixed messages coming out from Wisconsin Republicans and kind of Republicans across the country. I just find it really interesting. The one thing they do see, well, maybe not. I was going to say they're similar on no one is pledging that they're going to accept the results, except Eric Hovde did. Eric Hovde did. He did say on upfront, on WISN upfront, that he will accept the results of the 2024 election, and he thinks Donald Trump should do the same. That's not going to happen.
No.
Unless he wins. And now Senator Ron Johnson, not pledging to accept the results of the November election. This is in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, leaving the door open to objecting to the certification of election results. Johnson, talking to the Cap Times on Saturday, could not answer if he would accept the results of the 2024 election, calling it, quote, an impossible hypothetical, unquote.
No, that wasn't, no, the hypothetical, that's, does he know what a hypothetical is?
That for me, I don't know.
Hypothetically, Ron Johnson doesn't know what hypothetical means.
We have to see exactly what happens, Johnson said. If there are all kinds of abuses, we might have to start questioning those abuses, might have to investigate them. I certainly want to accept the results.
Well, luckily in the 2020 election, there were so few incidences and allegations and abuses. We were able to just accept it for what it was, because the 2020 election was smooth, fair, and safe. As has been reported by many, many groups, many politicians.
How many lawsuits were there?
61.
61 lawsuits.
61, and they won one out of 61, so way to go. And even our very own Robin Voss, the popcorn king himself, said that the 2020 election was fair and free and safe. So,
and people who say that it isn't are whack jobs.
And stupid. And morons. I feel like, I mean, we're not asking you to make a big, deep decision here, Mr. Senator Johnson. Are you going to just accept it? That's not really a hypothetical. We're just saying, hey, A or B, which one are you going to pick here?
But again, all of them are setting the stage, and it happened over the weekend with some of the Sunday talk shows. Marco Rubio saying the same thing. Well, we'll have to see. And again, this is all setting the stage for if the former president loses in November, we're going to be right back to where we were.
And that's, Marco Rubio, let me just take a moment to say, what a sad man. That man could have been the senator who led the revolution and the rebellion against Donald Trump, because he actually, he has a mind. He is a smart person. He could have said, let's put an end to this. But no, he's just absolutely... He's on board, and he has no choice. He can't fight back. He's not good at it. So it's disappointing to see these Republicans who, I don't want to say I would never have voted for them, but at least respected them for their positions at like four, five, six, 8 years ago because they were of a sound mind. But now it's just, I mean, like you said last week, Lindsey Graham plays one game of golf with him and he's all of a sudden Trump's best friend.
Well, Elise Stefanik, who is a Republican from upstate New York.
Yeah.
And she was on, I think she was on Fox over the weekend. And it's essentially the same thing. It's like she played her own sound clip for her.
Yeah.
Elise Stefanik, she played her own voice back to her and said, this is what you said about Donald Trump in 2016 about how bad he was for women and his treatment of women. And she just had a meltdown. But still, is right there backing him 100%.
Yep.
The level to which people are willing to prostrate themselves. That would be a whole nother issue.
Medically important.
But. And yes, but it's amazing to me.
And you got like J.D. Vance, same thing 4 years ago. Nothing, never Trump, never going to vote. I'm a Republican and I find this shameful. Oh my God. Just him and Tim Scott and Lindsey Graham and all those, everyone who just showed up at the courthouse. It's just pathetic. That not one of them can stand up. And at the very least, I didn't even say don't vote for him. I'm saying just stand up and say, yes, I will accept the election results in 2024.
But they can't do that if they're gonna be in Trump's favor.
No. And even if they said they were going to, it doesn't matter. There'll still be a huge swath of people who won't. And Trump won't. That's the most important thing. It doesn't matter if Ron Johnson doesn't accept them or Tim Scott or Jim Jordan. They're nothing. They don't matter. It's Trump. As long as he doesn't accept them, that's what matters. That's what's going to take. Because if he wakes up tomorrow and says, oh, yeah, I did lose the 2020 election, people would lose their minds.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. We will continue the conversation, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. And welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text at the same number at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We were talking about the Republican State Convention was held in Appleton over the weekend and still so many mixed messages about early voting and absentee ballot voting, because again, the Republicans have been demonizing that for a decade.
Especially
mail-in voting is fraud.
Yeah.
Trump said it.
Yeah. They've never been a fan of it, but it none less than in the past 6 years, four, five, 6 years.
And now Brian Schimming, Republicans need to be realistic, he says. If state law that affects this election says we'll have drop boxes, we're going to do what it takes to win.
Yes. I mean,
which does not that in essence lend credence to the fact that drop boxes are legitimate?
Yes. Drop boxes are legitimate. They're safe. They should be legal. They're finally getting the memo. The problem is they have, I mean, the leader of their party is screaming, if you do this, this is election fraud. So they have to somehow negotiate that and find a place to exist in the middle on it, to say, almost to say, yes, just let him say it. Just let him say it. But go ahead.
We know better.
You can throw in the drop. It's fine. Nothing's going to happen to you. Nothing. And the people who truly love Trump are not going to vote early. They're going to vote on the day.
Because there are Because paper now is magical.
Yeah, exactly.
It's much better paper than it used to be.
Do you know what fights crime? Paper.
We have spoken to Keep Our Republic many, many times on this show. I think they're doing really great work trying to take people who have doubts about our elections to take them through the process of all the safeguards and checks and double checks that are already built into the system. And they had one of their seminars last week here in Waukesha. And it's very interesting how this went. She spoke with WISN's Up Front, Kathy Bernier, again, a member of the Republican Party, by the way,
yes,
who is with the group Keep Our Republic, holding seminars around the state, trying to inform people about how our elections work. Calvin, let's play that clip from Kathy Bernier.
There are certain people that have found it fruitful for them, either financially or otherwise, to go around and make statements about 2020 election that are just absolutely false and not provable. And I'm going to discuss a little bit of that tonight. I couldn't possibly go in to all of the things that they've said and all of the assertions they made about 2020. But every time Donald comes into the state and says he won this state, I just cringe, because it's like he may not know he's lying. People keep telling him. I mean, I had an interesting interaction with Christina Bob, and I'm like, well, if the people around him are telling him this, he probably really does believe it. So what am I, you know, what am I to do? I'll just keep stating the truth, and the truth shall prevail.
You think it will?
I do. I do. I think once we're past this and the 2024 election has come and gone, I think we'll be okay.
That's Kathy Bernier from the group Keep Our Republic. We've had her on the show. We've had Keep Our Republic on the show a number of times. They travel across the state holding seminars to explain how our elections work and why they are fair and secure, taking people through the process, trying to explain how hard it is to commit widespread voter fraud that's actually going to swing an election. It would be so difficult. But a couple of things I want to say, and we've had Kathy on the show numerous times. I give her so much credit for giving Donald Trump credit that he actually doesn't believe that the election was free and fair.
Yeah.
Just a reminder, Cassidy Hutchinson, who was the former top aide to White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, told the January 6th committee that former President Trump did not want people to know we lost.
Yeah.
He knows he lost.
He knows he lost.
He knows he lost.
Yeah. It's not, I'm sorry, it's just not up for debate anymore. And something else about, you know, like Kathy is wonderful, but she did make the statement in that same interview that I called my boss and said, I'm still a Republican.
Yeah.
Because that's where they're at now. To make a simple statement like the election was fair and safe and free and fine and without any massive plots can get you in trouble now.
Well, and despite all those good faith efforts, and I'm not surprised by this, WISN's Up Front talked to some people who attended that seminar last week in Waukesha. Calvin, let's play that clip.
This was useless. And I don't believe they're nonpartisan. And I don't believe you look at this stuff that they've got saying, you know, we're focused on election integrity. We're focused like a laser beam on addressing election threats. They didn't focus on any of that stuff. What they tried to sell us is your elections can be trusted because look at, we've got this panel of experts up here. And the clerks did a great job.
And they had all the answers. The problem is they didn't have answers to the questions that we had.
Well, first of all, who wants a panel of experts?
Yeah.
That's suspect right away.
Also, okay. What were your questions?
Did Hugo Chavez buy space lasers in Italy in order to change votes in Wisconsin?
I'm going to stop you right there. No. Done. Next question.
But you have to prove that didn't happen, Greg.
No, I don't. There are refreshments behind you. Enjoy. I mean, it's that, like, that just, I can't even imagine what Keeping Our Republic goes through every time they put together these events
and put themselves out there.
And they're just saying, this is what we're like. This is not insulting the work they're doing or our process as a whole. Election integrity, quote unquote, is not a sexy topic to explain. It's not, you can't zhuzh it up. You're coming in there with a PowerPoint and a purpose. And the fact that they're like, oh, it was useless. It wasn't useless. You just didn't understand it.
Or you didn't get what you needed to back up your theories.
Yeah, you didn't get what you wanted to hear. You didn't get to, you know, you wanted to like what you want to like. That's fine. But you like something that's wrong. So.
Well, we're going to have them back on because I think the work that they're doing is really important. And again, you know, we have all respect for KOR. I just think they, obviously, they still have some work cut out for them.
Absolutely.
We have news on the way. And then when we return, very excited to be talking to Corrine Hendrickson from WECAN. It stands for Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed, and about all of their efforts to address the child care crisis we have not only in Wisconsin, but around the country as well. A lot of parents looking for help. A lot of child care providers looking for help. So stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network. And welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join the conversation. Call or text at 855-752-4842 or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Very excited to have our next guest join us. She is with a group called WECAN. It stands for Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed. Corrine Hendrickson is here. Good morning, Corrine. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Good morning, and thanks for having me. If you hear kids in the background, I am. My family childcare is open, and your next guest and I will switch. So she's taking care of them right now.
You're a little busy, I'm sure. So tell us, Corrine, a little bit about your background, please.
So yeah, I've been a family child care provider for 16 years. I do have my bachelor's in education. I was never going to go into early childhood and use that part because there's no money in it. Ha ha, here I am today. Just, you never know where life is going to, you know, send you. I started because I had a 10-month-old child and I had three very pregnant friends 17 years ago who could not find care. So this is not new. I said, should I quit my very good paying job in retail to start this business so that I can help you out and use my degree? And they said, sure, really? And so we did. And here I am today. And then about 12 years ago, I started advocating for children with special needs because it's so unbearably hard to find support to get those kiddos what they need. So that's what started myself and my colleague Brooke Ligler on this journey about 12 years ago. COVID hit 4 years ago, so we started WECAN and really started pushing on the idea that really at the core of the problem is the lack of wages for all of us in the field to stay, and that it's still too unaffordable for parents to pay, and that there has to be a better way, and it needs to change.
I cannot imagine the frustration of young families. I can't imagine the frustration for people like you who work in this industry. What is the average hourly wage for child care, early child care in Wisconsin? Do you know, Corrine?
Yes. So for child care programs, it is around $13.66 an hour for group centers. For family child care like myself, our average wage is around $8 an hour. That is an increase because of all the funding that came through the federal government. It was $3 less an hour before. Myself, this last year, because of all the raising rates for my insurance, my property taxes, my utilities, and my food, I lost $9,000 in income. So my income went down. So my rates are now going to be going up to offset that.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around that. That is remarkable. That's really remarkable. And yet I think the one thing we can all agree on is how important childcare is and how important it is to have qualified people dealing with our littles until they go off to school, because you're doing more than just letting them run around like it's a doggy daycare center, right? I mean, there are educational components to the things that you do.
Yes, and those doggy daycare employees make more than we do, by the way. and their doggy daycare parents complain less about what they're paying. So yeah, so yes, it might look like the kids are just running around, running amok, having a good time playing. But while they're doing all those playing, we are there to support and nurture them. We are there to help them navigate when they're arguing over the same toy, when they're trying to figure out how do we share, how do we take turns, how do we become good humans, how do we understand consent, how do we respect others, and they're, you know, wanting to be alone or wanting to play with certain kids. And that is definitely a skill set not everyone has. And then I also partner with the parents to explain to them how this is all actually, you know, creating the entire foundation for their future, and how, you know, I'm working with them. And I'm doing a lot more parent handholding in the last few years than I ever have before, because parents aren't having as much experience with young children as they used to, because families are smaller. There's fewer friends having children, so they're just not around kids. And so we're doing a lot more of that parent education piece too. And we're really partnering with them. And that's not something you get in the K-12 system at all.
Right.
And that's what we do too.
Corrine Hendrickson is our guest. She is part of WECAN, which stands for Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed. I'm so glad you mentioned the part about teaching kids how to share. A long time ago, we were talking about something similar, and whose responsibility is it, and what components are all part of education? And I said at that time, too, aren't teachers responsible for kind of helping guide them about sharing, about empathy, about not being selfish, about how to treat other people? And one guy blasted me and said, they should only be teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, and they have no business teaching morals. Or it's like, what are you talking? What world are you living on?
Yeah, and you can't teach those things if the kids don't have the self-awareness and the capacity to sit still. And they don't learn that unless they've been taught how to interact with others in society, and how, like, there's a time and a place for certain things and when to do that. And each environment is different. And they learn that situational awareness mostly those first 5 years by watching those adults and watching how we interact, and then also watching how, especially family childcare, I have young children, babies, all the way up to 12.
Wow.
Most of the time it's 0 to 5. Summertime, I get my alumni back. But really, those younger ones are watching how those older ones interact, and they're like taking it in and soaking it in, and they're observing that. And by them being able to observe that, they can then imitate it and practice it themselves. And that's what I remind people. These kids are practicing how to share. These kids are practicing learning how to take turns. They're practicing using their words. When they're little, sometimes it ends up being a push or a bite or a kick. But if we can help them understand and how to communicate, and how it's okay to be mad, it's okay to have those big feelings, because I know I was taught bad, big feelings are bad. Being
right.
angry is bad.
Right.
And you need to hide that, and you need to hold that in. Well, that's why we have these kids exploding in middle school and high school, because they've always held it in and they can't communicate.
I just think it's, you know, I think about that conversation we had, and I just imagine, you know, picking up your child from school and saying, you know, how was your day? Oh, a kid beat me up. Well, didn't the teacher do anything? No, it's not their job to do anything. Their job is to teach me reading, arithmetic, and social studies, and that's it. They don't get involved. Not their job.
Yeah, when he said that to me, I was honestly dumbfounded,
right.
Corrine.
Yeah, I don't think that would go well.
Yeah.
No, and the whole point of daycare before going into school is to kind of prep them, as you said, for that educational surrounding, so you can sit still, you can pay attention, you know not to bite the person who's sitting next to you, hopefully, by that point. You know, these are, and also, especially when you talk about helping out children with special needs, we know that private schools and charter schools can reject those kids out of hand. Public schools have to take those kids, so they too need some preparation for this setting.
They can reject them too after getting the money, let's not forget. They'll get the money for those kids, and then they can reject them because they don't whatever standard they'd hold up to. That's an important component. And, you know, I mean, I guess one of the things that's really, the solutions that are coming, the proposed solutions, I'll say, coming out of Madison to help your industry doesn't seem like the best solutions as far as like letting you stay open longer and hiring children to take care of children. And I mean, it just, I mean, I it sounds like we just need proper funding as with everything in education, we need proper funding.
Yep, absolutely. And that's what it comes down to. Other countries figured it out. Other countries used our actual studies and all of the economic wonderfulness to then do it in their own countries. But our own country can't do it. And yes, so in Madison, the Republicans are looking at it as a revenue problem. Well, you need more revenue, so stuff more kids in. That'll solve the problem. Well, okay, now I ask you to come into my program and imagine four more children in this room with me and tell me that I'm now able to earn my $12 an hour appropriately because now I have more children to care for. That doesn't help the kids with their education either, because if I have four more children, that's four more kids who need something at the exact same time, and I'm not able to meet those needs. By me not meeting those needs, their brains shut down because they are not safe. They don't feel comfortable. Their brains are no longer doing the little synopsis things that they need to do in order to actually learn. And so it becomes a bigger problem then later, because these kids will go off to school being even more unprepared. And the schools are even more unprepared because they're pushing down those academics at the same time. Same thing with that proper funding. Also, side note, private schools get more funding for kids with special needs than public schools do.
Of course.
They get like 90% of the funding. Our schools get around 30%. So on top of it, we have that extra. And that's another problem that we're running into, is because our child care programs, the best thing for those kids is to be included in our programs so that the children who are neurotypical understand that we accept other people and differences, and we sometimes have to be more patient. Kids who are struggling and have those special needs and need interventions need to be around children who are typical so that they can then learn from them. But the funding is cut so badly that I get like 2 hours a month from birth to three for a child with a lot of needs. And then I also have a hard time getting the school district to bring their person here to work with the kid instead of pulling them out and putting them in a restrictive environment instead of the least restrictive, which is the federal government's mandate.
Corrine Hendrickson is our guest. She's with Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed. What can our lawmakers do? What would you like to see our lawmakers do, Corrine, to make this better for everyone?
Invest in our children, invest in our families, invest in our workforce. And the Child Care Counts program worked. We have more programs for the first time that are regulated compared to the year prior than we have in over a decade. We have 700 more programs that will accept subsidy for low-income families because of that extra funding. We have higher quality because we're able to pay people who can stay and use their knowledge and their skill set and have honed it, and they're in those classrooms still working with those children instead of taking that great skill set into any other job. Because that's the thing, is when we apply for a job somewhere else, we get that job within seconds because we have the skill sets, we have the people skills that are needed. So really, to keep us in, as any business owner knows, you need to pay people a worthy wage so that you can recruit and retain. But you also, at the end of the day, can't charge too much for your product or service because no one will purchase it. That's why we're stuck here. And yes, people think we're bad business owners, but we are excellent business owners, or we would have imploded about 50 years ago.
Are there
because
things
we can play that fine line?
What are some of the things that other countries have put into place that we have neglected to do here, even though it was our idea first?
Universal child care. We invest around $500 per child. Almost all of that goes to low income. Other countries do $10,000 per child a year, right there. They're investing in their children. They're investing in their families. They have paid family medical leave so those parents can bond with their babies. And also it helps alleviate that need for more educators with the really young ones because they're home with their parents instead. Other states are doing better. Minnesota put $1 billion in so that they basically have a program like our child care counts where they put money in and it has to go to the wages. And then they also created an apprenticeship program that's a true apprenticeship program, not child labor, where they pay the apprentice, they pay the mentor, and then they are in the classroom working with the teacher to teach them how to be the teacher. So when they graduate at 18, they are ready then to be a lead teacher in a classroom.
Minnesota.
Yeah, we have Minnesota envy for so many different reasons. It's like, oh, fine. Go ahead, Minnesota. Be why better
you,
than us.
Why can't you be more like Minnesota?
If people are listening and they would like to get
We have fair maps. That's the hope. Well, that's what we're working towards that's what they did.
It's a start.
They got fair maps. Yep. And they flipped it. We're working on it.
It's a start. All right. Corrine Hendrickson is with Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed. We will include the link to your website when we put the show notes up after the show is over. And we're going to continue talking about childcare with a colleague of yours. Sarah Cazell is coming up next. Corrine, we'll let you go back to your kids. Thank you so much for carving out a little time for us. We are definitely going to have you back. This issue is not going away anytime soon. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Calvinator on the board, ready to take your calls and your texts at 855-752-4842. Or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 11 o'clock news, a round of the good, the bad, and oh, please make it go away. But we are going to continue talking about education right now. She is joining us. Sarah Cazell is here. Good morning, Sarah. Thanks for being here. And you had an op-ed that published today in the Wisconsin Examiner talking about when it comes to raising kids, it actually does take a village. Can you explain about your op-ed that you published today?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having us on and talking about this really important issue. So the argument that I made in the piece this morning was that we all know that it takes a village to raise healthy kids, and supporting our next generation takes not just families doing everything they can to raise their kids and early educators coming together, but it really takes the entire community getting behind it and supporting it as a public good. And our elected officials listening to what their constituents need everybody.
It's interesting to me.
So we know that there's a childcare crisis in this country. Sure.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
We have a little lag time here.
Yeah. So we know that there's a. Oh, okay. We know that there's a childcare crisis in this country. Everybody is aware of the fact that the parents can't find and afford childcare, and everyone's becoming more aware of the fact that what's behind that is the low wages in the field. So teachers like me who want to devote their life to helping parents partner to raise strong, healthy families and support that next generation with their early education, we just can't afford to stay in the field on the wages that we're earning, because right now families and tuition fees are basically comprising, what our wages, without childcare investment, public investment, we're relying on what parents can afford to pay. And so that kind of limits how much that we can make in the field. So we were calling for more robust public funding in the early childhood field with this rally, so that, you know, it doesn't fall on the parents to cover the entire cost of childcare, and it doesn't fall on the mostly women in the field like me who are doing this work to sacrifice, you know, our own ability to, you know, make a decent living and continue to stay in this field.
As Corinne said before you joined us, essentially, you can leave what you're doing now where you're making $8 to $12 or $13 an hour, which is just shocking to me. And because of the skill set that you have, you can go someplace else and get a job, probably no problem. And I was going to state the point earlier, you know, we want everyone in the workforce. We want the unemployment rate low. We want all of this is tied together. Parents can't go to work if they can't find childcare that they can afford. And if they can't find childcare that they can afford, then someone has to drop out and stay home to take care of the children. And then you're back to a one income household, and most households can't afford that anymore. So this is all tied together. And I am blown away by the fact, from what Corinne said too, essentially making $8 to $10, $12, $13 an hour for what we love to say are our most precious resources, our children.
Absolutely. That was what I came to the rally to testify to. I mean, I have been in this field doing this work for nearly 20 years, and I am currently making $12 an hour to provide this essential service to make sure that, you know, the parents that of the kids that I take care of day to day can do their jobs, can, you know, participate in the economy fully, participate in the workforce. So the fact that I can barely scratch out a living, I have to keep a second job, I don't have access to healthcare coverage, and I haven't even started saving for retirement. I'm almost 40 years old. That is, you know, my story exemplifies the story that most people in the field experience. And so if we want to have a 21st century childcare system that truly works for everybody, the wages and the, you know, the workforce doing the childcare work has to be subsidized. We have to have public funding meeting that gap between what parents can afford to pay and, you know, what we need to continue to do this work.
Sarah Cazell is our guest, and she was at a rally that was held in Madison
and you know,
on Saturday. We only have a couple of minutes left. Sarah, what was the turnout like on Saturday in Madison?
You know, it was a great turnout, especially considering the really hot weather that we had. And I, you know, I think one of the most remarkable things about the rally was the breadth of perspective that were shared. So we had not only parents talking about how hard it is to find care and afford it, not only providers like me talking about how hard it is to scratch out a living doing this work, but we had, you know, people making the economic argument from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation talking about how drastically this impacts our economy. And we had elected officials coming together with us to talk about, you know, how we really need to have public policy and public funding match the needs of, you know, the reality of American family life and truly support our next generation with public investment in the earliest years of education.
Sarah Cazell is our guest. She is a child care provider, and she has an opinion piece in today's Wisconsin Examiner. We will make sure we include that in our show notes after the show is over. It takes about an hour for Greg to get our wonderfully detailed show notes up on the website. Sarah, thank you for the work you do. Thank you for the work that you and Corinne do and everyone who provides this crucially important child care, not just for the kids, but for the parents. And as you said, prepping them for the future and school and hopefully becoming a healthy part of American society. It's absolutely important. We're going to keep this conversation going over the next few months. So thank you so very much, Sarah Cazell, for joining us. Really appreciate it. I know we will be talking to you again. You better get back to your kids.
Thank you.
Stay with us. News is coming up next. And then when we return, a round of the good, the bad, and oh, please make it go away. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network.